Hello, this is Rush Holt. Thank you for joining this call. We have some hundreds of people on the line, mostly military veterans. I'm sure there are others on the line who are interested in the care that this country is giving to military veterans. And I thank you all for joining us. And I also thank all of you who have served, the country or who are currently serving the country. I thank you for that service. We'll operate this more or less in a question and answer form. I'd like to say a few things for a couple of minutes and then turn to you. You will have a chance to ask a question if you press on your phone on the keypad asterisk or star three. You'll go into a queue. Somebody from my staff will get your name and information, and we'll go down the list and take questions. I'm pleased to say, some experts here from the VA who can help with any of the technicalities. So I will look forward to hearing from you. You can start any time to get in the queue with your questions. Again, thanks. You know, our country was founded by citizen soldiers, and it is the kind of work that you've done that has helped keep us free, and I thank you for that. Only because men and women are willing to go that we have done so well as a country. I'm certainly working every day to make sure that you get the health care, the education benefits, the other things that are due to you. And they're due to you because of a national promise. It really goes back to Abraham Lincoln, you know, in his second inaugural address, and the one that has those famous words with malice toward none, with charity toward all, also had the important national commitment that we will care for those who have borne the battle. And he, of course, was still in the midst of the bloody Civil War. But that was meant to apply to all veterans. And we've, year by year, I think, come closer to fulfilling that promise. We're not really fully there yet. The VA does some wonderful things. The country does a number of things to help veterans, help their families. There are no doubt some things that we can do better. So I'd like to bring you up to date on what I've been trying to accomplish on your behalf in Congress. Just before Congress adjourned a week or so ago, the House passed the Military Construction and Veterans Affairs Appropriations Bill for fiscal year 2011. I'm pleased to have been able to vote for the largest increases in funding for veterans health care over the last 3 years. In each of these years, there have been large increases in funding for veterans health care. And I hope this bill that we passed in the House will go to the President for his signature before Congress adjourns in early October. I'm pleased that we're paying more and more attention to the mental health of soldiers and veterans. That when we talk about health care, when we talk about caring for those who have borne the battle, it should be not just prosthetics, not just physical shrapnel wounds or other. We must address mental health, and we've gone a long way toward doing it. The most important thing you should know about this recent appropriations bill is that as a result of the change in the law we enacted last year, the bill would provide more than $50 billion in advanced funding for fiscal year 2012. You know, we haven't yet gotten to this idea of mandatory funding. We shouldn't have to fight in Congress each year for an increase in veterans health care. There should be mandatory funding. If you're a veteran, if you're eligible, you should get the care, even if Congress hasn't gotten around to passing the bill for that year. So for years, you and the VA doctors told Congress that the VA was always running out of money in the months before the end of the fiscal year. And now that money will be there in advance funding. The same funding bill also includes an amendment that I put in there directing the Secretary of the VA to spend $20 million for suicide prevention outreach. That means using, well, such things that some of you might be familiar with and some of you not, the Facebook and Twitter, the social media, these new technologies, to really reach out to veterans. I offered the amendment to help prevent veterans from taking their own lives because I was moved by the story of one family here in central New Jersey. The Beans, Greg and Linda, and their son Coleman are, well, it's an important story. You may have read about their story. Their son Coleman enlisted in the Army back in September 2011. He subsequently served two combat tours in Iraq. Like so many of his fellow soldiers, he developed PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. He got the PTSD diagnosis from the VA, but the Army refused to recognize it, redeployed him. Just a few months after coming home from that tour, he took his own life. A couple of weeks later, the VA called to confirm his next appointment. Tragic. And his parents have devoted themselves to reaching out around the country, to reaching out to Congress, to doing everything they can to prevent this from happening to other soldiers, to other families. And when Linda Bean relates, when she testified before Congress, related an incident where she called a veteran's office and they said, well, if the veteran comes, we'll take care of his mental health problem. And she said, that's not good enough. It's not up to the veteran to try to figure out how to get care. It's up to us to figure out how to get it to them. And that's the idea behind this, the $20 million that I put into the appropriations bill for outreach, so that it's not up to the veteran to figure it out. In the case of Greg Bean, he was a member of the Individual Ready Reserve. So unlike the active duty counterparts or those normally assigned to existing Guard or Reserve units, the members of the IRR are available for mobilization, but they can fall through the cracks. And that's really what happened with Coleman Bean. In between deployments, they lack direct and easy access to the kinds of suicide prevention services and support structures that are available to active duty troops. So the very least we can do for veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan who are still on the reserve rolls but not in units is ensure that someone checks in with them regularly to make sure that their needs are being met, that they're adjusting satisfactorily to civilian life, so forth. And I'm pleased that Senator Lautenberg has introduced the companion bill in the U.S. Senate. And so I hope the full Senate will take action as we have in the House. I won't make predictions about what the Senate will do, but just in case, as in so many other cases, they don't get around to passing this legislation, I've sent letters to Secretaries Gates and Shinseki of the Defense Department and the VA asking that they implement administratively our proposal to require checking in with these reservists. Even if the law is not yet enacted by Congress. The problem of suicides is urgent. More soldiers, as I understand it, have died at their own hands in the last year than have died in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, anyway, let me turn briefly to some other issues that I know are on the minds of many veterans. Some of you who have used the VA have expressed concern to me over the $1 copay increase, the increase in the copay. And my understanding, and if I'm wrong, my guests from the VA who are on the line here and will join us in a moment will correct me, but my understanding is that the $1 increase applies only to veterans in Category 7 and 8. In other words, veterans who are above the VA's income threshold and with no service-connected disability. Veterans in priority groups 2 through 6 will see no increase, and of course veterans in priority group 1, rated at 50% disabled or higher, remain exempt from copays. I'd like to be able to report more progress on some other issues that I hear about, such as getting the concurrent receipt for retired pay and disability pay. But unfortunately, there just hasn't been much movement on those issues. I continue to support legislation that would fix that, there's not much movement I can point to there. I call this, and many of us call this, the disabled veterans tax, because it is. You have to pay a penalty in your retirement pay for your disability pay, and that's not fair. Now, I mentioned there were some other people on the line. From the Department of Veterans Affairs, we have Jim McLean, who's the chief of community-based outpatient clinics for the VA's New Jersey healthcare system. And with Jim are his colleagues Mac Harper and Frank Quadrino, who serve as community outreach coordinators for the New Jersey healthcare system. And Jim will be able to answer some questions about the Fort Monmouth Clinic. In fact, I'll turn to him in just a second. But first, let me introduce Ray Zawacki, who's the Deputy Commissioner for Veterans Affairs of the New Jersey Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I thank these gentlemen for taking their time after hours to come in tonight and talk with all of you. Jim, could I ask you to give us an update on the status of the search for the new site for the VA clinic that's currently at the Patterson Center at Fort Monmouth? I've gotten, along with Frank Pallone, a commitment from the VA to keep that open until 2011. As you know, Fort Monmouth is in the process of closing under the base closing, and that's a whole other matter that the Army, I think, in a big mistake, decided a decade or so ago that they wanted to close Fort Monmouth, and they have seen to it that the BRAC Commission came up with that answer. I would say they stacked the deck, but in any case, Fort Monmouth will be closing. And so, Jim, could you give us an update on the status?
Yes, Congressman Holt. First, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to come on the call. It truly is a pleasure for us to interact with our veterans, and you've been a tremendous supporter of our veterans throughout your time in Congress. Let me begin by saying that the VA New Jersey healthcare system is dedicated to keeping a community-based outpatient clinic in the vicinity of Fort Monmouth. This will go on well past 2011. There are some challenges with keeping the clinic located on the Fort Monmouth campus after the post closes. A lot of the support systems that we currently receive from the military will not be present. So we have engaged in a search program to include having a number of veterans on that panel and have located a tentative site. It's approximately 2 miles from the post itself. The things that we looked for at that site were sufficient room to expand services, sufficient parking for our veterans, a good neighborhood. And we tentatively have found that area or that site near Tinton Falls and Shrewsbury, and we're looking forward to beginning the preparation for the clinic and hopefully to see that clinic dedicated with Congressman Holt present during the ceremony later on, probably in the late winter or early spring of 2011.
Good. Well, thanks very much. I see quite a few of you have joined the queue with questions. So, Zach, could we take a question from among the hundreds of people listening in on the call here?
Yes, we can. And I just want to remind everyone that if you want to ask a question, you can do so at any point during the call. You can press *3 to enter the queue. You'll re-enter the queue after talking with a member of Representative Holt's staff, and I'll announce your name when it's time to ask a question. We likely won't be able to get to every question, but at the end of the call, you can stay on, leave a recording of your question, and Representative Holt will get back to you. So the first question comes from Jim in Freehold. Had a question about TRICARE. Jim?
Yeah, Congressman Holt, thank you very much for doing this. I think it's very important that you have been outreach to all the veterans during your time in Congress, and we do appreciate that. My question tonight concerns obviously our current deficit in the country, which everybody knows is rather astronomical. But as a 30-year Air Force veteran retired, I'm concerned that the administration, Secretary Gates, is going to use retirees' benefits, means tested, to help pay for their deficit. And I'd like to talk about that. Where do you see that coming, especially TRICARE for Life and means
tested
for that?
I don't see that happening. You're right that there are budget pressures in the DOD. Secretary Gates has shown that he is willing to forego some expensive weapon systems in order to keep the budget down. I think it's generally recognized in Washington that defense budget will not grow at the rate that it has been growing. So you're right about the pressures. But I do think that there is very strong political support for TRICARE. And, we've just gone through a year with a rather vociferous debate on whether we're going to provide health care for Americans or at least make it accessible to them. And what we came up with was a national commitment to make health care accessible to all Americans. That's what the debate was all about this year. And it would be inconsistent with that to cut back on TRICARE. You'll notice in the healthcare debate, as rancorous as that was sometimes, no one suggested during the debate that TRICARE be cut. So I think there is strong political support to sustain it. For myself, I certainly will oppose any cuts. Thanks for the question. Another question?
Yeah. Next, we have a question from Kathy in Oceanport.
Yes, Congressman Holt. My husband is a 35-year Navy veteran, and I was wondering, has anything been done, or is it not possible to start possibly trying to keep the commissary opened on Fort Monmouth?
Great question. You speak for a lot of people on that question. And I've raised this issue with the Secretary of the Army, McHugh, at our May meeting. So that was a couple of months ago now, several months ago now, I guess. And I made the case for keeping it open. He was, I guess I'd say, noncommittal at the time. Maybe he hadn't, maybe he wasn't fully familiar with it. But it is up to the Army or another service to keep the commissary open. I think it's a good idea. I think there would be adequate use for it. It's possible that the Navy, Naval Weapons Station Earl folks also use the commissary in addition to, various people in the community who are eligible to use it. It's possible that they will want to weigh in to keep this open. I don't have an answer yet, and the Army could do it. Now, some folks at Fort Monmouth said to me it will require a change in the law for the Army to keep it open. I don't think that's true. We have looked into that. The Army could decide that there is and would be sufficient use, and and decide to keep it open. It does not, I believe, require a any further action to, by Congress. Do any of the gentlemen, any of my veterans experts here know anything about that or have anything to add on to it? I guess not. Okay.
We have nothing to add, but I, too, am a user of the commissary and hope that you are successful in keeping it open.
Well, I will keep pushing on it, and, you know, I guess you remind me it's time to go back to Secretary McHugh and ask him again. So now he should be fully up to speed on it. All right, Zach, another question?
Okay. Next, we have a question from James in Hopewell. James, go ahead.
Congressman Holt, as I read the provisions for the education bill, the member of the armed forces is required to serve a full 3 years before they are eligible for any educational benefits. Is that true?
You know, again, let me. I'll turn to the experts. Let me just make a quick comment about the VA bill, the GI Bill. I mean, this is it's modeled after the famous GI Bill of 1944, which was I just think a landmark in American history. You got to remember, this was a time when we were running a deficit, a big deficit. It was a time when it would be easy to have said, you know, we can't afford, we can't use, you know, tax dollars from those who are doing well to and shift them to people from families who had never gone to college, and you know, that wouldn't be right. Well, it was right. And millions of people went to college, and it helped not only them, it helped the entire country. And, you know, numerous economic studies have shown that the payback to the country in kind of the well-being and quality of life, but also in actual dollars, tax dollars collected by the federal government, the payback even exceeded the large outlay to send all of these GIs to college. Of course, each GI...
Do I have a chance to say anything more?
Yeah, well, sure I will. I'll give you a chance. Let me just finish that general comment about how important the GI Bill was. This GI Bill that was passed a couple of years ago is on scale as large as that GI Bill. So it is a real commitment to education for veterans. It extends it in many cases to families, and veterans should get educational benefits for each of their months of service. Yes, sir. Yeah, the questioner, was that James? Did you want to say something more?
What I'm concerned about here is that there were exclusion principles written into later GI bills that were not in the one you talk about, the World War II GI Bill. And I'm interested in what exclusion. I'm familiar with the Korean War. GI Bill, which had a number of exclusion principles, not in the World War II bill. And I'm wondering whether it might be...
Yeah. No, I understand your question. I just wanted to put it in perspective, because there's some people, I mean, maybe the veterans on this phone understand it, but many Americans don't understand the significance of the GI Bill. Gentlemen, here, my experts, can you add anything about the exclusions in the new GI Bill?
Thank you, Congressman. This is Ray Zawacki from New Jersey Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And, Jim, in answer to your question, you need to there is a formula. And you do, in order to receive the 100% benefit, you need to serve 36 months. You can also get the 100% benefit of, or maximum benefit of, the GI Bill if you serve 30 continuous days but are discharged due to a service-connected disability. From that point down, it's graduated. So if you serve at least 30 months but less than 36, you get 90% of the maximum benefit. 24 months to 30 months is 80%. 18 months to 24 months is 70%. and so on down the line until you get to at least 90 days of service between that and 6 months, and you'll get 40% of the maximum benefit. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yes.
And that's what I was referring to when I said veterans should get, and I think can get, educational benefits for each month of their service. But it won't be 100% right away. Now, if, you know, if for children of fallen soldiers, there is a full educational benefit, and if I'm not mistaken, and these educational benefits for troops with 10 years of service or 6 years of service with a commitment of four more can transfer benefits to family members as well. So there, that is an expansion from the old, the traditional GI Bill, I believe. Am I correct on that, Mr. Zawadzki?
As far as I know.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yes, you are correct, Congressman. That's exactly how it works. And I just might point out to Jim also that the maximum benefit is based upon the tuition at the highest rated tuition state university, you know, in the state that the veteran is located in.
So that is restricted then to state universities. Private schools would not be included on full tuition.
Correct. It's right. It's the highest tuition charged by a state university.
You could apply it to a private university. It's just it wouldn't cover the full tuition. That's right. At some private university.
Are living costs involved in this as well? Do they have an allowance? It used to be $105, $110 a month allowance.
Yes, no, there is the cost of living allowance involved. They pay the tuition, they pay a fee for books, and I think there might be some other expenses involved that they cover. So, yes, it's similar to the World War II GI Bill. But no, not private universities. But in most cases, I'm a Vietnam vet myself. One of the other panelists here is also, and it's far superior to anything that existed when we got out of service.
Well, the reason I raised the question is I'm a Korean War veteran, and clearly the GI Bill was World War II was clearly superior to the Korean one.
Well,
yes.
Anyway, we think this is good. I'll be happy to hear from you about improvements that you think could be made. Zach, another question?
Okay. We have a question from Charles in Kendall Park. Charles?
Yes. Hello? Yes, this is Charles. Hello?
Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Hello?
We had him for a moment. Charles? Okay, we'll try and get him back. We have another question from Peter in Ewing.
Yeah, hello?
Go ahead, Peter.
Please go ahead,
hello.
Peter.
Yes,
are you, Peter, where are you from?
Ewing, New Jersey.
Ewing, good, okay.
And first of all, before we even get to my question, I'd like to thank you for your participation in the military and your service during the Vietnam conflict. And I am a Vietnam veteran, as well as you are. And my question, to me, through the years, and it's been 40, it just seems like every time that a
let me interrupt you. No, I did not serve in Vietnam, but I certainly respect those who did. So please go ahead.
Okay. It just seems over the years as I've sat back and watched, why does it take almost an embarrassment with these gentlemen, the suicides and the like of the Iraq and Afghanistani veteran, why does it take almost an embarrassment, maybe not on your part, but on the government's part, to do something for these poor, and I'm going to call them boys because in most cases they are?
Well, Yeah, I mean, I know some of what you're talking about. You know, in the early days of the Iraq War, there were really horror stories of people without body armor and mothers who were taking up collections to buy body armor, the vests and so forth for their sons or daughters. You know, I think that you do hear about some of those horror stories. By and large, I think the VA for the veterans and the services for the enlisted active duty soldiers does meet the large majority of their needs. I think it is the exceptions that we hear about, and that's, it is true that sometimes Congress will quickly get on the stick when they hear about some of these exceptions. And it's always nice in hindsight to say, you know, you should have done it before. I think we have not paid sufficient attention to mental health. I mentioned that earlier. I mean, all during the Second World War and the Korean War, we would dismiss these things as battle fatigue or you know, some other name, and not really treat it. Now I think there is a large effort by the services and by the VA to provide mental health coverage that's, well, maybe not yet on a par with the physical care, but it's getting there. I mean, there are a few things that are as astounding as the prosthetic work and some of the artificial limbs and other work of the VA. So I don't know whether anything is up to that level of sophistication. But, you know, the mental health care is becoming very sophisticated, and we're getting there. But I understand. I hear your frustration about these things. Zach, did you want to have that query, that sort
yeah,
of
we do have an interactive
now,
poll
if you
question.
Could explain it, please?
Yeah, one thing we can do on these calls is do an interactive, non-scientific poll that you can do by entering one of the keypads. This question, what we want to know is, do you currently use the VA healthcare system, TRICARE, or both? If you use the VA healthcare system, please press 1. If you use TRICARE, please press 2 on your telephone. If you use both, press 3. You can do that right now. And while we're doing that,
this is not a scientific poll. This is not a scientific poll, but it kind of, it will give me some idea of who's on. We don't have a choice of neither, do we, Zach?
We do not.
Okay. So 1 if you use the VA, 2 if you use TRICARE, 3 if you use both. Next question, please, Zach.
Yeah, and just want to remind participants that you can still press *3 to ask a question to get in the queue. And if we don't get to your question, definitely hope you will stay till the end to leave a recording so Representative Polk can get back to you. We have a question from Gloria in Monroe. Gloria?
Yes. My husband is a World War II veteran. He enlisted in the war before we were at war. That was in 1940. And he was overseas for almost 3.5 years in the European field. He got all kinds of medals and all kinds of honors. He was even a recipient of the Legion of Merit, which is a pretty high honor.
That is very high honor. You know, give him a big handshake.
That's next.
From me and a big kiss from you, please.
Okay, I will. Thank you. But you know what has happened with him? He really was wounded, and not to an extent where he had to be sent home or anything, but he was wounded, and it was hard. They hardly had any places for these wounded men to be taken care of. So they had medics that took care of them, et cetera, et cetera. Now, he should have, he got the medal, the medal that they get when they're wounded, what do they call that?
The Purple Heart.
The Purple Heart. He did get it.
Yes,
he
which goes back hundreds of years.
That is
a high honor.
You know, this was, many years ago. I don't have to tell you. He's now 91 years old. And he's still around, and he still goes to the VA. Once a year he goes there to check in with them. However, they don't have that on record. And he did write to them, and they told him that his records were burned up.
Oh, I hear this story. I've heard this story. Yes.
And I said to him, well, is it important? He says, look, I don't want them to give me any money because there are people that need money more than we do. He's probably entitled to some kind of compensation, but he doesn't. He's not doing this for compensation. What's your problem? He wants it on record.
Thank you for calling on behalf of your husband. I think I can help. There have been a number of cases where people have come to me, you know, and they've been told, well, the records were lost. There was a big fire. It's now, in many cases, possible to, through other military records, to reconstruct the history and determine what medals and awards the veteran is entitled to. And it's something that I do often. My staff will research these things, and I've got to tell you, it's one of the great pleasures of this job to be able to give the medals, in this case a Purple Heart, to a veteran who earned it but never received it. And, you know, there were a lot of so call my office. You can go to my website. You can call me toll-free at 1-877-RUSH-HOLT. That's 1-877. It's an 877 number, but the second 7 is an R. So 1-877 and then spell out RUSHHOLT. Or you can dial 609-750-9365. We'll get the information. You'll have to give, you know, send me a form. It's easy, and I'll look into it. There are a lot
Congressman?
Of concerns. Yes.
Yeah, this is Frank Quadrino from the VA New Jersey healthcare system.
Yes, Frank.
One of the questions I do want to ask Gloria is,
yes.
So does her husband still have? Do you still have a copy of your husband's DD-214? His discharge
what is that?
Papers. That's his discharge
That's
papers.
That's what he has. He has them.
Okay.
Yes, he has.
Because sometimes it's indicated right on the discharge papers, you know, receipt of a Purple Heart. And if that's indicated there, then you should.
No, it doesn't say anything.
It doesn't say anything.
It doesn't say it on that. And you know, as I was telling you, he's been paying for his medication right along from the VA. He doesn't get anything free from them. He does, and some of the Medicaid, he does pay for it, and it's not that we can't afford it. We can, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
He just wants it on record that he got that Purple Heart. He's gotten all the other medals we have hanging in his den, but
mm-hmm.
the Purple Heart we don't have.
Well, I'll be happy to look into it and you know, see if we can find the records. It would be my honor to carry that up to Monroe and present it to him, if we can find the records and verify this, I'd certainly like to do it. You know, there are a lot of veterans that I run into who, after, you know, in 1945, wanted to get on with their lives and didn't wait around for parades or medals, and now, you know, in their 80s, they're talking to their kids or grandkids or, in some cases, great-grandkids, And they say, oh, yeah, I got a medal. And the kids say, well, you know, can you show me? And at that point, they call their congressman. And it's a great pleasure when we're able to fulfill those requests. Thanks, Gloria, for calling. Let's take another question.
Okay. William in East Brunswick.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you, Congressman Holt, for taking our calls and listening to the veterans' concerns. Mine does not apply to me, thank God, at the moment, but it does apply to a good number of my brothers in arms who served in the Navy and the Coast Guard in Vietnam. And this has to do with Agent Orange exposure. I have heard various media reports saying that the VA is denying Agent Orange benefits to people who weren't actually boots on the ground in country in Vietnam. And that's a bit of a concern to us who were mostly on ships. My particular ship sat off the mouth of the Ong Dak River, which is a branch of the Mekong, which drains the whole country of Vietnam. 9 months, and we distilled our drinking water and cooking water and bathing water from the ocean. Heaven knows how much dioxin from the Agent Orange was in that, but like I said, this does not really concern me. I have had no effects, thank goodness. But I wonder if there's any truth to that and if any research or other effort has been put into that for the folks who may be having a problem from that.
Gee, I don't know about that. I don't know about people being denied. There is in the appropriations bill that is passed by the House, not yet passed by the Senate, so not yet law. There are new eligibility rules and streamlining for processing VA claims for Agent Orange disabilities. They make what they call presumptive disability. So you don't have to prove actual exposure to if it's plausible or one can presume that's the source of the injury. That will be in this new law, assuming it passes.
Congressman
McClain or Mr. Zawaki, can you add to this?
Well, this is Mac Harper. I'm from VA New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Healthcare.
Yes, please, Mac. Yes.
William, are you there? Okay, William, the thing is, you should go ahead and file a claim to the best of our knowledge.
I think he wasn't calling. I believe he was not calling for himself, was he? Maybe I misunderstood, but please go ahead.
I do not have any issue myself. I just wanted this for the benefit of my fellow brothers in arms.
Okay, William, what I would do if I were you, I'd talk to your fellow brothers in arms and have them file a claim anyway. To the best of my knowledge, we have identified specific ships that were in the Navy or the Coast Guard. So have them file the claim. We would advise them to get help from a VFW, American Legion, County Service Officer, someone like that who does this every day. Have them file the claim and just make sure they have a copy of the DD-214 and what ship they were on. And like the congressman said, there is a presumption of. So they didn't have to have feet actually on the ground. But if the ship was in a certain area, then they may be eligible for Agent Orange benefits. So I would still have them file the claim, but I'm 99% sure that there are specific ships that are identified. Okay, William?
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity, Congressman.
Yeah, and there is in the supplemental appropriations Agent Orange money to increase and improve treatment and improve the eligibility screening. So I can give you more details about that if you want to contact me. I don't have that at my fingertips right now. Zach, another question?
Yeah, we do have the results of the poll, if we want to, if I can announce those real quick.
Yeah, I mean, they don't mean much, but most people on this phone are getting VA benefits. Yes, go ahead, Zach. Yeah,
71% from the VA. We have a question from Lillian in East Brunswick.
Yes, thank you very much for your help for all the veterans, Congressman. My husband is 100%.
Thank you. I'm doing my best.
Oh, thank you. He's a 100% disabled veteran from World War II, and he has been getting wonderful care, and there's wonderful doctors at the VA. The problem is now, at 85, traveling to East Brunswick and Lyons for doctors. And I, as a spouse, have given a plan called CHAMP VA for my medical and my drugs, and it's a great plan. My thought was, if you could look into, we'll look into with the VA or whoever else, that when a veteran reaches a certain age, like perhaps 80, that they would be able to pick up this CHAMP VA plan, and so they could use local doctors and not have to. It's very difficult. You need a doctor to get to East Orange. So we do have to use local doctors, but we have to pay for a plan in order for him to do that. And that was my only thought, he's 100% disabled veteran. If they could be able to switch to the CHAMP VA, that would really be helpful.
All right. Anyone want to take this?
Congressman,
gentlemen?
Yes, hi. Yes, this is Mac Harper again. Ma'am, I didn't get your name, but there are two things
Lillian.
You can do.
It's
Lillian. Okay, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Two things. One, does your husband have a primary care physician at one of our hospitals or clinics?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. You can probably call without going there, but call Fort Monmouth and see about whether your husband would be eligible for one of two things: home-based care, where someone could come out to your home, and secondly, there's a program called FEE, which is where the VA would authorize your husband to go to a local physician, and the VA would pay for it. So, but basically, that's something you would have to apply for.
What was the name of the second one?
The program is called Fee Basis, FEE, as in fee. Fee Basis Care.
Oh, Fee Basis.
Fee, okay. Yes, ma'am.
Fee.
And that would mean that the VA would authorize you to go to a. F as in
Foxtrot.
Thank you, Congressman. I appreciate that.
What was that?
It's F as in Frank. E-E,
fee
basis care.
That, I had S. Oh, F, oh, fee, okay.
Yeah, fee basis care. And essentially, the VA could authorize your husband to see a local doctor at VA expense. And, you know, there are some caveats to that. But bottom line is, he might be able to travel 2 or 3 or 4 miles and see a doctor in the community, and the VA would pay for it. Of course, there are some restrictions. He might get 3, 4, or 5 visits per month, but I'm sure that would help you out rather than going all the way to East Orange all the time. So I would look into either fee basis or home-based care, and you could talk to your primary care doctor regarding getting involved in one of those two programs.
Well, I just thought if the congressman could look into it, you know, I mean, perhaps there'd be something that they would think of doing for.
Well, no,
for
I think you've got it. I think you've got a good possibility there.
You know, when you reach 80, maybe, you know, or something
and Lillian,
like that.
If I might just say, you said your husband was 100% service connected?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, see, that's all the more reason you should apply for fee-basis care, because in most cases, if they're 100% service connected or service connected, and some of the criteria involves being, don't take this the wrong way, but being infirm. If the veteran is infirm to make it to a hospital or to a clinic, then the VA could authorize fee basis.
Mm-hmm. Because he has many doctors, unfortunately, because not only from the war, which was his head, he had the shrapnel, but he has other problems now, you know, like cardiac.
Well,
so he goes to many doctors, and it would be... And
well, Lillian,
I
think the VA could authorize... I mean, it depends on the individual circumstance, so I can't talk about, you know, his exact eligibility.
Right.
But for people like your husband, he would be able to see doctors, you know, right there in East Brunswick. And so call his VA point of contact, his usual doctor there.
Okay.
And if you have any problem with that, give me a call, you know, and I'll be happy to help try to straighten it out. One thing I'd like to do now
for
those
Thank you. One of the things I'd like to do right now for those of you on the call is ask if any of you would like to receive my periodic email newsletters. I like to keep my constituents up to date, and I send out periodic, more or less weekly newsletters. And if you like to receive it, you could press 1 on your keypad. I'll get your email address, send it to you. It's easy to unsubscribe, so you're not making a lifelong commitment here. I try to keep it interesting, and some people tell me I do. So if you want to get the weekly newsletter, press 1. Let's take another question, Zach.
Okay. Russell in Dayton.
Hello, Congressman.
Yes,
this is
hello,
Russell.
Hello?
My question is...
You say you're from Dayton, okay?
Yes, I'm from Dayton. My question is, there are various veteran organizations for health care. There's the VA, which you're familiar with. There's TRICARE. There's the U.S. FHP, which is Uniformed Services Family Health Plan. Is there going to be any change to these plans when the national health care program goes into effect?
The short answer is no. National health care plan is sort of a misnomer in the sense that this is not a national health service. The legislation that we passed is based on the existing health care systems we have in the country. So it leaves VA untouched, TRICARE, and so forth, for people who get their insurance through private insurers, through their employer or former employer. That will be left basically the same, although insurance companies will be made to behave a little bit better. They can't cut you off if you become too expensive and that sort of thing. And with regard to Medicare, it leaves the structure the same, but it makes it better in the sense that it will provide more of the costs of prescription medicine. It will put more of an emphasis on primary care so that you don't have to go running around trying to find the right specialist. It will put more emphasis on coordination of care so you don't waste time having repeated tests. You know, 2 weeks later you have the same test because that doctor didn't know that you had already had that test. There will be much better coordination. So it takes those existing healthcare systems and makes them better, but it doesn't turn it into a national healthcare system. You still go see your doctor the way you always have. And if you're outside the system, in other words, you don't have healthcare insurance, you're unemployed, you're have a small business, and you haven't been able to afford healthcare, this makes it affordable for you to enter the system to get coverage. But if you already have VA coverage, it is not affected by this. With regard to veterans health care, I might mention a couple things. One of the things that we've done in the last couple of years in Congress is create something called the Wounded Warrior Resource Center, which serves as a single point of contact for service members and their families. And that's a very, very useful thing to provide the kind of coordination of care that we're hoping to get in Medicare and in the other healthcare delivery system in this country. Thanks for that question. Zach, maybe time for another question or so?
Yeah, we can go for probably one more. And we have Myrtle in Monroe.
Good evening,
Myrtle.
Congressman. Yes.
Hi.
Please
go ahead.
Congressman Holt. Good evening, Congressman Holt. It's a pleasure to speak with you as usual. While I totally agree that a bill that emphasizes help for returning veterans with mental problems and physical disabilities Of equal and vital importance is our need to see that when our veterans return to civil life, something positive will be done to help them get jobs, which would give them the ability to earn a decent living. Unemployment can also cause serious mental anguish and problems.
Well, yes, it sounds like you have a well-prepared question there. Thanks for asking that. I wish my answer were as well-prepared as your question. I mean, right now we have 10% unemployment in the country, and unfortunately, unemployment among veterans is higher than than in the cohort that has not served. That's really unacceptable. I've put a lot of attention into, bringing attention to this in the public mind, creating a Hire a Veteran Week just to draw attention to this. But more important, we have provided through the Small Business Administration, through the VA, and through the Department of Labor, education and training opportunities for veterans. We try to make clear to employers that veterans actually should be your first choice as an employee. These are people who are by and large mature, who are by and large well-trained, maybe world travel, and able to take responsibility and take initiative beyond what other people who haven't served might have. And so it is a real problem. I understand the psychological burden that comes from unemployment, whether you're a veteran or not, but it certainly is not something that we should impose on veterans. But I don't have
Congressman?
Yes.
Yes, this please. Is Razor Wacky. Myrtle,
yes.
I can assure Myrtle that your comment has not gone unnoticed by the officials such as Congressman Holt or the officials at the Department of Labor. There is a great amount of focus being placed on that particular issue right now, because everybody does understand that it is not mental health is certainly a serious issue, and it should be the top priority. But part of that is a good job when they return and or returning to a job that they had before, and with
Absolutely.
The economy and everything, that's the economy hasn't helped, but there is a great amount of focus being placed on it by the Department of Labor and other officials and other agencies.
On a related matter here, and we'll have to wrap up in just a minute, for members of the New Jersey National Guard, employment presents a problem for the family members as well. And the Family Support Council here in New Jersey does a lot to help make sure that the spouses left behind here in New Jersey have assistance in getting employment, because that can be particularly devastating to the whole family,
yes.
to the service member
yes.
abroad, and to the and to the spouse and to the children. And so I really have to hand it to the family support organization here in the New Jersey National Guard. That helps a lot. We're out of time. Unfortunately, we have this time slot reserved for only an hour to conduct these calls. Before we end, let me once again say this is not your only chance to be in touch with me. I want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment that we didn't get to now, please leave a message on the voicemail at the end. You can call me, you can fax me, you can write me by U.S. mail. I want to hear your comments. I will consider them. If you have a particular question or problem, whether it's with the VA or with TRICARE or anything else, let me know about it. Sometimes, in fact, often, I can help work it out and see that you get fair treatment. So, gentlemen, I thank you for joining us, Mr. McLean, Mr. Harper, Mr. Quadrino, Mr. Zawaki, and Zach, I thank you for coordinating this call. I wish we had more time. We didn't get all the questions, but I do look forward to hearing from all of you. Thanks, and good night.